Countess Hélène thought it necessary to speak severely to him about it. Pierre felt that she was right, and to avoid compromising her, went away to Moscow. In Moscow, as soon as he entered his huge house, in which the faded and fading princesses still lived, with its enormous retinue, as soon as, driving through the town, he saw the Iberian shrine, with innumerable tapers burning before the golden covers of the icons, the Kremlin Square with its snow undisturbed by vehicles, the sleigh drivers and hovels of the Sitsev Vrashok, those old Muscovites who desired nothing, hurried nowhere, and were ending their days leisurely. When he saw those old Moscow ladies, the Moscow balls and the English club, he felt himself at home in a quiet haven. In Moscow he felt at peace, at home, warm and dirty, as in an old dressing gown. Moscow society, from the old woman down to the children, received Pierre like a long-expected guest whose place was always ready awaiting him. For Moscow society, Pierre was the nicest, kindest, most intellectual, merriest and most magnanimous of cranks, a heedless, genial nobleman of the old Russian type. His purse was always empty because it was open to everyone. Benefit performances, poor pictures, statues, benevolent societies, gypsy choirs, schools, subscription dinners, sprees, Freemasons' churches, and books. No one and nothing met with a refusal from him, and had it not been for two friends who had borrowed large sums from him and taken him under their protection, he would have given everything away. There was never a dinner or soiree at the club without him. As soon as he sank into his place on the sofa after two bottles of Margaux, he was surrounded, and talking, disputing, and joking began. When there were quarrels, his kindly smile and well-timed jest reconciled the antagonists. The Masonic dinners were dull and dreary when he was not there. When, after a bachelor supper, he rose with his amiable and kindly smile, yielding to the entreaties of the festive company to drive off somewhere with them, shouts of delight and triumph arose among the young men. At balls he danced if a partner was needed. Young ladies married and unmarried liked him because, without making love to any of them, he was equally amiable to all, especially after supper. "Il est charmant, il n'a pas de sexe. He is charming, he has no sex," they said of him. Pierre was one of those retired gentlemen-in-waiting of whom there are hundreds good-humouredly ending their days in Moscow. How horrified he would have been 7 years before, when he first arrived from abroad, had he been told that there were no need for him to seek or plan anything, that his rut had long been shaped, eternally predetermined, and that, wriggle as he might, he would be what all in his position were. He could not have believed it. Had he not at one time longed with all his heart to establish a republic in Russia, and then himself to be a Napoleon, and then to be a philosopher, and then a strategist and the conqueror of Napoleon? Had he not seen the possibility of, and passionately desired, the regeneration of the sinful human race, and its own progress to the highest degree of perfection? Had he not established schools and hospitals and liberated his serfs? But instead of all that, here he was, the wealthy husband of an unfaithful wife, a retired gentleman-in-waiting, fond of eating and drinking and, as he unbuttoned his waistcoat, of abusing the government a bit, a member of the Moscow English Club, and a universal favourite in Moscow society. For a long time he could not reconcile himself to the idea that he was one of those same retired Moscow gentlemen-in-waiting he had so despised 7 years before. Sometimes he consoled himself with the thought that he was only living this life temporarily, but then he was shocked by the thought of how many, like himself, had entered that life and that club temporarily with all their teeth and hair, and had only left it when not a single tooth or hair remained. In the moments of pride, when he thought of his position, it seemed to him that he was quite different and distinct from those other retired gentlemen-in-waiting he had formerly despised. They were empty, stupid, contented fellows, satisfied with their position. "Well, I am still discontented and want to do something for mankind, but perhaps all these comrades of mine struggled just like me and sought something new, a path in life of their own, and like me were brought by force of circumstances, society and race, by that elemental force against which man is powerless, to the condition I am in," said he